Well, good morning, everybody. It's Kevin Stevenson. Thanks for joining me today on I Don't Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Always appreciate you spending some time with me as I speak with intriguing and interesting guests, typically in the healthcare space. And today is no different. I've got a good friend of mine on today. It's always fun whenever you get to talk to one of your friends. It's a little bit more, you know, a little bit lighter. We have a little bit more fun. Not to say we don't have a lot of fun typically anyway. But join me in welcoming today's guest, Dr. Brad Trinidad. Hey, Brad.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for the introduction.
Glad to have you on. Brad is a vascular surgeon here in Central Texas, and we work together. And Brad is a phenomenal surgeon and an even better human being. And that's kind of hard to find sometimes. So as I said, Brad is a vascular surgeon. And Brad, I know most of my audience probably knows a little bit about vascular surgery. They've heard the term. But tell everybody, you know, what do you do?
Well, that's a loaded question, Kevin. Well, it's and the reason is because the definition of vascular surgeon has changed, right? So in 2026, a vascular surgeon is a lot different than maybe 30 years ago. We didn't really have necessarily vascular surgery. So a true board certified vascular surgeon is a surgeon who obviously deals with any blood vessel that's in the body that's not in the heart or the brain. And they can treat those arteries or vessels both open and endovascularly, so with minimally invasive techniques. So it used to be in the old days, right, when you think of vascular surgery, think of the old, you know, fempop bypass. You do an open major surgery, open carotid endarterectomy, open aortic aneurysm repair. And now in 2026, you know, vascular has really changed. And we do a lot of endovascular techniques now. I would say that 60 to 70% of my practice is actually endovascular or minimally invasive. So a lot of those things that we were treating with open surgery in the past, we can now treat with complex endovascular techniques, similar to what you would see with like cardiology or interventional radiology, where they do a lot of endovascular techniques. And vascular surgeons really kind of learned from some of those specialties and became really good with endovascular therapy. And so instead of doing an open aortic surgery, for instance, which usually means a 4 or 5 hour surgery and 7 days in the hospital, you can treat an abdominal aortic aneurysm with a minimally invasive technique, which lasts about an hour, and the patient goes home the next day, right? So a truly remarkable advancement in care. And vascular surgeons are like the firemen of the hospital. So we're the guys that get called by everybody for problems, right? So orthopedics, trauma surgeons, cardiologists, heart surgeons, OBGYNs, at some point, and neurosurgeons, everybody's going to call a vascular surgeon for something. And we like that, right? That's our whole model. We want to be that person. So we're the guy that we want people to call when there's problems.
Well, I know one of the big draws for you to come to Waco was the presence of a hybrid operating room.
Yes.
Very different. Not a lot of hospitals in communities of this size have those. So tell my audience a little bit about what differentiates that hybrid operating room from a traditional operating room.
It's so important these days. A hybrid operating room is essentially is a operating room like you would think a standard operating room where you can do open surgery, which also has the ability to do fluoroscopy and minimally invasive procedures. So something like a cath lab. So basically, it's an operating room and a cath lab brought together. So at any point in a hybrid operating room, you can be doing an open surgery, and it allows us to really cater our treatment plans to the patient, right? So you're not forced to do one thing over the other. You can do both. So I can be in a case and I'm doing an endovascular component, and then I'll need to do a partly open component of the surgery. So truly hybrid. You're going to see more and more hybrid operating rooms over the next decade because they're so important in the care of vascular patients.
Very good. Well, I know, you know, you came to Waco earlier last year from Amarillo, from the Panhandle of Texas. Talk a little bit about the transitions that you and your family made. You know, I mean, you had a very established practice up there. You were doing incredible work there, and you chose to up and move. Yep. Why was that? And again, talk a little bit about that transition.
Yeah, and I had a great job. I loved my job. It was a very busy job. I was probably one of the busiest vascular surgeons in Texas. at the time. Very large catchment area as a trauma center. But I'm from San Antonio. My wife is from College Station. So sometimes, you know, you have to put some of your professional, you have to make professional sacrifices for personal issues, right? And for me, it was family first, right? So it was 8-hour drive to San Antonio to Amarillo. So my parents aren't able to see their grandbabies, and so they were getting a little upset by that. So for me, it was more of a, you know, location, right? A personal preference, trying to get closer to home, trying to get the kids closer to the grandparents. You know, my wife is from College Station, so her mom is only 1 hour and 20 minutes away. So I mean, and she still lives there. She's a professor at A&M. So it just made sense to kind of be more centrally located. And I felt that the Waco market particularly, which is where I'm at, here in Central Texas, a very underserved market, surprisingly, you know, because we're right in between two major cities with Austin and Dallas. Yeah. But, you know, people forget that in this area between Austin and Dallas, there's probably 1 million people between Waco, Killeen, Temple, and then all the surrounding areas. And those patients, they don't want to go to Dallas or Austin. They don't want to go to the big city. You know, they want to come to a little bit more manageable place, but you can still offer, you know, very complex and high quality care.
Sure. Okay. I got to go back to what you said because, yeah, I actually do have listeners all around the country and some around the globe. When you mentioned, you know, you were in Amarillo, which is also in Texas, moving, and your parents live in San Antonio, but it was an 8-hour ride. Everybody, the sense of how big Texas really.
Yep. Yep. I was closer to like Santa Fe, which is only about 3 hours away. Oklahoma City was 4 hours away. I was closer to basically three other state capitals, closer to those capitals than I would be to Austin and Amarillo. But yeah, that's how big Texas is. Yes.
Yeah, that's funny. That is so funny. So family reasons and you know, what a great reason. You know, I did the same thing a number of times in my career for my family. I love to hear that you put your family first and that's so important to me. So talk a little bit about the transition professionally. I know, you know, there's been some bumps in the road, like always happens, but talk a little bit about that, how you've adapted.
So, well, it, you know, there's always going to be bumps, like you said, right. In any transition.
Sure.
Especially when you leave a place that you're comfortable, right? So you are knowingly going to a place where you're not going to be comfortable for a while until you get more acclimated. And so that was expected. I think that the good thing about this job was I saw a lot of similarities in where I'm at now to where I was. You know, it's a hospital employed practice, you know, a practice where I'm really only operating at one hospital. A lot of the kind of struggle sometimes is just trying to find out where your new facility is at, because you may be bringing something they don't have or they were not used to. So trying to bring them to that point and meeting them, try to figure out where you should take the program, that's been the most difficult part. So a lot of that takes commitment from both sides. And one of the keys for me today in this podcast is really kind of explaining the commitment of a hospital employed physician. It's so different, right? And when you, before you take another job, or you, if you're just coming out of training, for instance, for some of the young guys that are coming out, you have to understand what you're capable of, but you also need to understand what the facility is capable of. And can you guys find that meeting point? Because if your goals and objectives are not aligned with your employer, then you're going to have problems, right? In any job, not just being a doctor, but any job. And so making sure, and sometimes it's hard to identify that completely until you're actually there, right? You actually have boots on the ground. The transition takes some time. But I've been very happy with how things are going here. You know, we've made remarkable improvements in our program and growth. But that's life in 2026, right? If you look at physician employment, that's the hospital employed physician is the major model now in 2026. Right. Mm-hmm. We're looking at what 60% of doctors are now employed. And so trying to create this partnership, because that's what it is, right? It's a partnership between the doctors and the hospital is by far the most important way and the best way to make sure that you're growing appropriately and you're growing how you want to grow professionally and personally.
Yeah. And I think with you, you know, a couple of things that the physician environment has changed so much over the last 10 to 15 years, because back in the day, I'll say that because I'm old, but back in the day when physicians came out of training, they moved to a community and they were there until they retired. And now you are one of so many physicians that say, hey, I'm going to make a big move. And I don't think people understand what an undertaking it is for you personally and professionally, because like you said, you were in a very comfortable place doing very well, but you came to a new market that really didn't have your level of expertise. And so you had to do, I know when you first came, you made so many visits throughout the market to physicians and even other hospitals to share what you were able to do. And trying to explain to them, maybe your general surgeon has done some of this in the past, but this is the expertise that I bring to it. Right. I mean, and I will tell you, Brad, I've been doing this for a long time. You're one of the best, I hate to say, use the term, but one of the best marketing physicians, because you get it. You understand going out and the fact that, you got to build your practice too.
Absolutely. No, and that's the thing. And what I kind of how I approach this, since it is a partnership, and there is some strategy involved, right? Because yes, from a personal standpoint, you're trying to build your practice. But what I often tell the hospital, and this is how as physicians we should approach, especially if we're hospital employed, is how we're marketing your organization, right? So when I go out there and I'm talking to people in the communities, I'm talking, yes, of course, about what I provide, but often I'm saying what we do, Ascension, right? The facility, the hospital. So it's not just Brad Trinidad. With that said, as a doctor, you should always focus on your personal brand, because the hospital won't follow you, but your personal brand will. But while you are a part of that organization, part of the agreement between you and that hospital is to really establish, hey, this is the partnership. This is what we are trying to grow. This hospital that I'm employed at is allowing me the opportunity and giving me the opportunity to build this. And they're giving me the tools and the resources, right? So it is a huge component. And educating people, like you said, particularly with something like vascular surgery, where there's just not a lot of education on what exactly it is, things that people don't necessarily know who to send, or, heart surgeons, general surgeons, et cetera, doing vascular surgery. There are people out there doing stuff. So there's an education on what is what, how do you differentiate? And the only way to do that is to go out there and talk to people.
Did you run into a lot of turf wars with some of the other surgeons and subspecialties that say, hey, I do that already?
Absolutely. And that's for a lot of specialists, right? So you're going to have that. And I think that's the hard part of because vascular surgery itself, it's a newer specialty, right? And a lot of it too is the Society of Vascular Surgery made it a point to try to get as many vascular surgeons out. So about 10 to 15 years ago, they created a new residency paradigm because we have such a shortage of vascular surgery. So now we're starting to see more vascular surgeons in places you may not see vascular surgeons, right? Waco, Texas, Amarillo, Texas, right? Places that in those situations, there's plenty of cardiologists or, general surgeons, even sometimes heart surgeons that have been there a while that are kind of forced into doing some of these things. And so they get comfortable with it. So there is some turf war, but it's more about educating and working collaboratively because everybody has their role. There's different levels in this game, right? We call medicine. And so I think that the important thing is knowing when to turn to the experts, right? Knowing where you're, what you're capable of, taking it to that point and saying, okay, well, this is, I need somebody a little bit more expertise in this area, right? Mm-hmm. And so by having more vascular surgeons available, particularly modern day vascular surgeons for my specialty in areas such as, you know, Waco or some of the smaller communities, now you have that ability to send people to somebody who's got a little bit more expertise in those fields. So, yeah, the collaboration is key, right? Working with those, you know, instead of fighting, I think is the best way to do it, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So you talked about kind of the past evolution of vascular surgery and really going to more minimally invasive techniques and procedures. Where do you see vascular surgery going over the next 10, 20 years? Because, hey, you're a young guy. You're going to be practicing probably 30 years at least now on you. So talk about where do you think you're going to be, you know, down? Let's look at 2056 when Brad Trinidad might be close to riding off into the sunset. What do you think you're going to be doing?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? I mean, it depends on who you ask. If you ask some vascular surgeons, they'll say robotic surgery. We've got some vascular surgeons that are now trying to pioneer robotic surgery. I think more importantly, we're going to continue to kind of push the endovascular minimally invasive envelope. And so you're going to see more and more endovascular. You're going to see less and less open, which in a way is kind of concerning, right? Because we need to have people that still can do the open surgery. And that's a big issue in vascular surgical residencies currently, is making sure that we've got the prerequisite number of open surgeries. Thankfully, at my training, we did not have that problem. But I can foresee that in the future being an issue. So you may see some robotic activity in the future. but again, time will tell, right? I think, and honestly, we may not do as much surgery, right? Our medicines, particularly in the vascular realm, they've gotten pretty good. And for instance, you look at carotid surgery, there's some data suggesting maybe we don't need to treat all these carotid arteries, right? Maybe we're doing too many.
Really?
You know, the medical management now has gotten so good that maybe our stroke risk for an asymptomatic high-grade carotid stenosis is actually pretty low. So we may actually see a little bit less operating as our medicines evolve and our medical technology improves.
Yeah. And that's got to be a little strange for somebody with surgeon in their title. I mean, you know, that was one of the main reasons you got in, because doing surgery excited you. But I know, you know, looking back on my career, you know, I remember in 2000, when I was in outstate Nebraska, we had a very robust cardiac surgery program. We had one cardiac surgeon that did 275 surgeries a year for a community that, you know, catchment area 300,000. And now you look at communities like Waco that have multiple cardiac surgeons that may only do that many in the entire year.
Right.
You know, the entire community does that. So, you know, it's interesting how things have evolved. And I've talked to some of my cardiology friends. Kind of the same thing in the cath lab. You know, it went from surgery to cath lab to now medical management and pharmacological management. And so, you know, it's just the evolution of care across the board.
Well, and you raised an interesting point about, you know, a cardiac surgeon doing pretty much everything and doing kind of being the only guy. Mm-hmm. You know, that model, surgery has become so specialized and medicine has become so specialized. Mm-hmm. That model cannot exist in 2026 anymore. Things are too specialized. They're too complex. And so I think that's how our training has gone, right? Where we kind of, people specialize and focus in certain areas. And so we have to be careful now with people doing things in certain areas, because the expertise is just not there. Right. That's just in every facet of medicine that is so specialized, right? Even in vascular surgery, you may have a vascular surgeon who only does peripheral work, or you may have a guy who only does aortic. It's going to be interesting to see how medicine evolves over the next 20 plus years with it being so specialized. That just only means you need more doctors.
Yeah.
Or there's shortages, you know, and there's shortages everywhere. I was looking at something earlier, and they were looking at workforce shortages in 2037 for doctors. Number one on the list was vascular surgery, 37% shortage by by 2037. The second was thoracic surgery, about 36% shortage. And then the third is actually family medicine, right? So there's just not enough doctors. And I think that the hospitals are starting to sense that. And the doctors are definitely sensing it because of how much work we have to do these days. It's just so much pressure.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we talked a little bit about your transition and your journey to come from Amarillo to Waco. So talk, give some of your colleagues that might be considering making a geographic move. I mean, not moving within the same city, but moving, to another town. Give them a few tips, some things that you considered,
Before you move.
Absolutely. I mean, and it's hard for me, like I said, just because there was a personal component to it, but that's always a huge piece, right? You may be living in Texas, but have grandchildren in North Carolina and you have to make decisions on where you want to be and what you prioritize in life. But I think that, for me as a young guy with kids, you always look at the community itself from a school district standpoint, safety. From a professional standpoint, you want to make sure, again, like I mentioned earlier, that the location that you're looking at is aligned with you personally and professionally. Because if you're not happy at work, it doesn't matter where you go, you're not going to be happy, right? You can be in the same city as all your family, but you're miserable at work. It's just you're going to want to get out of there, right? So I think that a lot of it, if it's a professional move, making sure that you're aligned with that group, which is really hard to do without being there. So that's why you have to do a lot of due diligence and talking with people in the community, talking, of course, with people who work in that environment, kind of getting a lay of the land, trying to identify things like where you're going to live. Obviously, of course, right? Location. You have to figure out. For me, for instance, I'm a big comfort guy, and I like convenience. Mm-hmm. So, and those are the things you have to think about. You have to tell yourself, what are the things that are most important for me? So for me, I was like, what do I want to live in a big city and drive 2 hours a day going to 9 different hospitals?
Yeah.
Or do I want to live in a mid-sized city where I'm 6 minutes away from the hospital and I only have to go to one facility? Right. So those type of questions you have to ask yourself before you take jumped. But again, it's all about professional and personal alignment.
Yeah. Very good. Well, I'm sure any of my physician listeners would appreciate that because, like I mentioned earlier, things are changing so rapidly in healthcare that, maybe you become misaligned with your current facility for your practice, and it just might be time for change, or payer mixes change, or, maybe your community is not growing at the rate that you need for it to grow for you to continue to expand your practice.
And I think that's an important key, right? Because like you said, that's one of the downsides of hospital employment. One of the things I wanted to kind of chat about was like this hospital employment versus private practice. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. When you're a private practice doctor, you are the one that creates the organizational structure of where you want to take that practice. But when you are a hospital employed physician, now you have to ensure that your organizational thoughts and goals are aligned with the hospital. And they may change while you're there, right? Yeah. And if they change.
Yeah. New administration comes in or exactly. Maybe somebody loses a contract with a payer and everything shifts.
And then that's the thing that. Where you're starting to see more changes in doctors and moving, and you're not necessarily seeing all the time that the doctor who's been there for 20, 30 years, right? Because of these organizational shifts that come with the ever changing healthcare system. The hospitals are under the margins every year, and the margins get shorter and shorter and smaller, and so they're going to shift. Now, the good thing about being hospital employed, you mentioned this other thing, was payer mix. From a hospital employed physician, the nice thing about that is that doesn't necessarily affect me, right? So from a work, we are structured under work RVUs. Most hospital employed doctors are structured under work RVUs. So, for me, if I treat somebody, for instance, with bad insurance or no insurance, I'm going to get credit for it. But a private practice
sure.
doctor or surgeon, they have to think about that stuff, right? They have to think about that, and it affects their financial livability, you know,
yeah.
and their practice, right? Their longevity. And so thankfully for me as a hospital employed, I don't have to deal with yeah. that. So there are a lot of pros in that sense where, you know, a lot of private practice doctors will tell you they have two jobs. Mm-hmm. They've got the practice, they've got their medicine job, and they've got their business job. So for me, thankfully, as a hospital employee, majority of my time is spent, you know, I can focus on the medicine. I don't have to deal with overhead. I don't have to deal with my own employment, you know, hiring and firing and whatnot, and which again could be a negative for some, right? Because now you lose that control. But there are some pretty significant positives about that from that perspective.
Yeah. Well, and I'm sure too, and I go again going back in my career and thinking about certain physicians who were in private practice, you know, back in the day, you know, you went to medical school for medicine. You didn't get the business training. And so many physicians either, you know, had to become employed or just failed because of the business aspect of their practice, not because they weren't good physicians.
Well, and then a lot of that is because, you know, every year, right, we know this, that the payments of physicians goes down. We know that, right? It's based yeah. from CMS. And it doesn't track with inflation. And every year, kind of the overhead goes up, right? Things get more expensive. And yeah. so it is, you have to be on a razor thin margin to do private practice in 2026. And the way that the government has structured medicine and healthcare, they want consolidation, right? They want everything in the hospital, which of course benefits the hospitals, but it doesn't benefit doctors. And so I think until there's some major national changes in healthcare, it's going to continue to follow this pattern where you have more and more, basically every doctor is going to be hospital employed, which should make the hospitals want to do everything they can to make sure that the physicians are comfortable and happy, right? Because the biggest thing that doctors want is autonomy. And when you yeah. go hospital employee, theoretically, you are losing some of that autonomy. So the way that the hospitals can give that autonomy back to the doctors is by focusing on giving those doctors really important decision-making capacity, right? The doctors have to be the ones making the biggest decisions in the hospital because they're the most important component of the hospital. And I think that's how hospitals can really get the physicians more involved and more ingrained in their community is by allowing them some little bit more autonomy. And you can't just treat them like a cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it, right? Yeah. It won't work.
Absolutely.
And the thing is, too, is if you look at healthcare, it clearly the government is also saying that medicine, they want to take as many patients out of the hospital and do as much as we can outside the hospital and leave only the sickest of the sick in the hospital, right? So they are leaning more towards outpatient care, which is why you see reimbursement go up for some of the more outpatient stuff like ASCs, right? You look at, right, just look at Ascension, right? They bought AmSurge. That is a clear indication of where Ascension, for instance, wants to go. And this is just me. This is my personal opinion, just looking at what happened. This is a clear sign of, hey, we are going to take our hospitals and save them for the most mm-hmm. sick and try to do everything we can outpatient. And that,
yeah.
to me, is a huge step in the right direction, actually. And I'll tell you why. Because obviously with Stark Law, doctors cannot own hospitals. However, ASC models do allow physicians joint ownership. So if you want to talk about a way of giving back autonomy to your physician and creating a sense of community and keeping somebody long-term, if you somehow joint venture with doctors and hospitals, if these hospitals can joint venture with doctors and have ASC facilities, outpatient facilities, now you've created a more equitable environment for the doctor where they don't feel like they're just being used, right? So I think that's going to be a huge thing in the future. You were asking about where I see it in the future. I can totally see a point at some point having some sort of equity in an ASC with a hospital system that we can allow for cheaper, more efficient care to our patients, because that's what the government wants.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. Well, hey, Brad, I knew this would be a lot of fun, and it was, of course. So I really appreciate you joining me today. Any final words?
No, thank you for having me. I'm really excited about the future. If anybody wants to talk to me about anything, you know, I'm a very pro hospital employed model guy, right? Mm-hmm. I think that if done right, hospital employment for a physician is a really good way to go. You just have to make sure that you and the facility are in the right alignment and have the same goals and thought process. If you don't, you always have to be willing to kind of take the next step and try to figure out where you can find that. And that's just the nature of being a doctor in 2026.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good thing to close on. Brad, again, thanks for joining me. Dr. Brad Trinidad, vascular surgeon here in Waco, Texas. And folks, thanks for joining me again today on Eye and Up Care with me, Dr. Kevin Stevenson. Take care. See you next time.